Goeienaand, baie welkom by Sterre en Planete. Ons het vanavond vir Jim Adams, Professor Mati Hoffman, Willie Koorts en vir Kobus Olkers met Ruimte Weer. En ons stel hom eerste aan die woord daar uit Kanada.
Goeienaand Henie en goeienaand luisteraars hier uit Toronto uit. Kom ons kyk, hoe lyk die son hierdie week? Ja, hy is heel wat besig, besiger as wat ons nou die afgelope paar maande en jare gesien het. Ons het 'n redelik komplekse magnetiese area in die noordelike halfrond van die son, so 10-20 grade bo kan die evenaar, en hy is nou prachtig mooi geo-effectief, met ander woorde, hy is nou so in die rechter boonste kwadrant van die son, waar as daar enige iets daar gebeur, dan voel ons het hier op die aarde. En gelukkig is die ding kompleks, maar hy is nie baie sterk nie, as mense dit in sulke woorde kan stel. Die pole is baie duidelik, hulle is baie deur mekaar, jy sien 'n noordpool en 'n suidpool en 'n noordpool en weer 'n noordpool en dan weer 'n suidpool, maar gelukkig is hulle nie intens naby aan mekaar nie, wat dan vir ons baie ekstra energie gee, dan vir die potensieel van koronamassa uitbarstings of ekstra vakkels. Nou ja, hy is kompleks genoeg om reeds vir ons C-klas vakkels te gee. Ek weet nie of hy meer, of hy sterker gaan word nie, met ander woorde of die klomp magneetpole nader aan mekaar gaan beweeg en so die mekaar gaan bly nie. Ek dink ons gaan waarskynlik 'n piek sien hier so teen donderdag se koers en dan weer volgende naweek vir die ander ouetjie wat nou oor die rand kom. Dan nog, soos ek nou net gesê het, daar's 'n aktiewe area wat nou oor die rand van die son in beweeg, oor die in die linker boonste kwadrant van die son. Hy is byna by aan die evenaar van die son, en hy lyk asof hy baie intens gaan wees. Ons sal later in hierdie week sien hoe hy ontwikkel, maar ek verwag definitief ten minste ekstra vakkels van hom af. Dan het ons nog 'n baie aktiewe area in die suidelike halfrond van die son. Hy sal binnen die volgende dag of twee ook geo-effectief wees. En hy lyk asof hy dalk die potentieel kan hê vir miskien dalk 'n enkele M-klas vakkel. So, ek dink ons radio, langafstand radio gebruikers het reeds die boodskap gekry. Die achtergrondgeraas gaan baie hoog wees. Die ionosfeer gaan 'n bietjie deur mekaar wees. En ek het baie sympatie met hulle hierdie week en volgende week. Maar wat ons gewone mense aan betref, wat ons GPS'e en ons internet en die soort van ding, die kanse dat hulle gesteer gaan word, of selfs die krag of so iets, is nog relatief skraal. Daar is nog net nie genoeg energie in hierdie komplekse magnetiese areas op die son nie. En dan sal mense wat gereeld luister agterkom, dat ek nie 'n woord gesê het oor koronagate nie, daar is inderdaad nie 'n enkele koronagat te sien, op hierdie kant van die son nie. Dit lyk asof daar teen laat volgende week een oor die rand gaan begin beweeg, maar dit is eers die week daarna se probleem, so ons gaan nie nou oor hom gesels nie. En dan natuurlik het ons 'n paar filamente, maar hulle is baie naby aan die pole van die son, en ons verwag geen aktiwiteit van daai kant af nie. Dis 'n besige week vir mense wat met sensitiewe radio dinge werk, soos die mense wat langafstand kommunikasie doen, maar dan aan die ander kant vir ons gewone mense is dit net 'n pragtige beeld om na te kyk as ons na die son se ekstra beelde gaan kyk. Goeienaand almal, rustige week.
Ons sê baie welkom aan Jim Adams daar in Maryland in die VSA. Goeienaand Jim.
Goeienaand.
Ons het ook vir professor Mati Hoffman in Bloemfontein. Naand Mati.
Naand Danny.
En dan vir Willie Koorts in die Kaap. Hallo Willie.
Goeienaand almal.
Nou, ons gaan vanavond oor ruimte toerisme praat, dis nogal een interessante onderwerp, maar voordat wil ons gesels oor een belangrike mylpaal wat SKA betref. Die goedkeuring is gegee om voort te gaan met die bou van hierdie reuse radioteleskoop. Mati, weet jy meer daarvan?
Ja, daar was 'n aankondiging in die week, en dit is 'n baie groot saak hierdie. Ek gaan sommer net hierso aanhaal vir die Director General van die, wat hulle noem die SKA Observatory, Prof. Philip Diamond. Hy sê, I am ecstatic, this moment has been 30 years in the making. So, dit is een baie groot droom wat waar word vir wetenskaplikes oor die hele wereld, dit is 'n internationale poging, maar Suid-Afrika is dan een van die twee lande saam met Australië, wat die twee bene van hierdie reuse project gaan huisves. Hulle praat van die SKA Low en die SKA Mid. Dit is nou watter frekwensies opgevang word in die radiogolfgebied. En die Australiërs het dan die een frekwensieband en Suid-Afrika die ander frekwensieband. Nou, vandat die toekenning gemaak is aan hierdie twee lande, is dit nou geruime tyd wat verloop het, 'n hele paar jaar. Die rede daarvoor is dat benewens dat lande dit, die deelnemende lande dit in hulle begrotings moes beskikbaar kon stel vir bepaalde jare, moes die baie van die tegnologie nog ontwikkel word. Die tegnologie was nie beskikbaar om die geweldige, onder andere die geweldige vinnige kommunikasie wat nodig is om hierdie paar duisend skottels en antennes wat gebou gaan word, se data by mekaar te bring nie. En ek dink ons kan trots wees daarop dat ons deel is hier op die voorpunte van hierdie nuwe ontwikkelinge. En 'n groot deel daarvan word met Suid-Afrikaanse kundigheid gedoen, natuurlik in Australië weer met hulle kundigheid. Wel, dit gaan 'n groot ekonomiese inspuiting wees ook vir die ingenieursindustrie, natuurlik ook vir daardie streek in die Noord-Kaap. As ek nou reg onthou, sit ongeveer 30% van die geld wat in Suid-Afrika gespandeer word, moet aan Suid-Afrikaanse maatskappye gespandeer word, en hulle het nou al gewys, hulle kan ongelooflike projekte doen. Dink nou maar net aan die aan SALT, die South African Large Telescope, wat ook met groot Suid-Afrikaanse inhoud vervaardig is. Natuurlik was daar kritiese komponente en instrumente wat internasionaal bekom moes word, maar dit trek ons na die voorpunte toe, wat ek dink baie goed is vir ons land. En die beplanning is om dit teen 2028 te voltooi. Nou sê groot konstruksieprojekte is geneig om laat te loop. Ek ons kyk hoe naby kom hulle aan 2028, dit is nog 6 jaar van nou af. Maar ons moet dink, elkeen van daai skottels, dis mos in die omgewing van, dis nou aan die Suid-Afrikaanse kant, omgewing van 15 meter of 12 meter in deursnee. Maar dit is baie groot, wat baie presies gemaak moet word, oor 'n groot afstand. So dit is 'n moeilike konstruksie.
Right, let's talk about space tourism. Is there, Jim, a future for space tourism?
Oh, I think the future is bright. And, you know, just last week, the United States Federal Aviation Administration licensed Virgin Galactic to begin flying its Unity spaceship, basically carrying commercial passengers up to space and back, you know. So I think the market for space tourism is opening up. And now the real question is, where do you want to go? You know, there's lots of different ways that you can go into space and come back. And I think then the next question obviously is, how much money do you have in your pocket for now? But I think eventually our children or our grandchildren, it'll be as common as flying on an airplane.
Jim, I notice here that with one of the companies that's high up on the space tourism, have a waiting list, and for only $250,000, you can book a place. That is Virgin Galactic, founded by what's his name again?
Richard Branson.
Richard Branson. Only $250,000.
only $250,000. But, so, like I said, the question is, where do you want to go? So, a company like Virgin Galactic and their Unity spaceship shouldn't really be confused with a company like SpaceX and their Falcon Dragon 2 module, which the SpaceX module flies into orbit. And the the Unity spaceship from Virgin Galactic flies what we call a suborbital flight path. So it goes up and it comes back down, but it never achieves orbit. Both cross what's called the Kármán line, which is sort of the internationally recognized standard for where space begins and Earth start, or space starts and Earth ends. And depending upon which country you're talking to, that's either 100 kilometers or 80 kilometers. So both rocket ships go above that. But one will take you for a multi-day trip like the Inspiration 4 folks will do later this year on SpaceX. And Virgin Galactic will take you up and back down for about 7 minutes in space.
Is that now to sort of get rid of gravity?
Yeah, yeah. So you're weightless on the Virgin Galactic trip for about 7 minutes. The von Kármán, or the Kármán line, I should say, isn't about gravity as much as it's about international law. And where do international rights begin, and where do national policies come into play?
Jim, there must be a sort of a regulating body for space tourism, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's such a new field that not yet. There are two groups that sort of keep track of things like this. It's the FAI. So it's got a French name, Fédération Astronautique Internationale or something like that. And the United States Federal Aviation Administration. Federal Aviation Administration is actually licensing organizations to fly from U.S. soil to carry commercial passengers. The FAI kind of keeps track of statistics. So they're doing less licensing and they're doing more tracking.
And obviously, one of the problems in a certain sense is not anybody is fit enough to undertake space tourism.
Yeah, well, so again, that's a risk that the passenger takes. And so it kind of depends upon where they're going. So if you're going to go into space, like the Inspiration 4 folks will do later this year, they'll fly on a Falcon 9 crewed Dragon module. They'll stay in space for about 3 days and then they'll come back. There's a lot of training involved in that. If you're going to, like Mark Shuttleworth and Dennis Tito, you know, first two space tourists ever, they had to go to Russia and train for 6 months in order to fly on the Soyuz module to the International Space Station. So there is training. There's a desire to make the flight easy enough on humans that you could just need to be fit enough to ride a large roller coaster. Don't know whether that's ever really going to happen, but at the moment, there are programs and organizations that you can go to and pay them to train you to be an astronaut physically. So, yeah, it requires some training. I think the group from Virgin Galactic are trying pretty hard to make this as normal a space flight as you could possibly make it, so that you maybe avoid most of the training. But still, there are health concerns.
Yeah, I seem to remember that Shuttleworth even had to learn to speak Russian.
Yeah, well, it would be important, wouldn't it? You know, if you're going to spend 6 months in Russia.
Without understanding a word.
Just to come back to the cost, you emphasized there the important difference between actually going to orbit and just being in a suborbital flight where you in which you experience weightlessness. I just noticed here the other option, a more conventional one, is of course the zero gravity.
Yes.
I don't think they go beyond the carbon line that you mentioned, but they go in those parabolic flights. And in that case, for the people that would really consider some participation in space tourism, this is more affordable for more wealthy South Africans, and that's $5,400 per person. And then you spend quite a number of hours and 15 experiences of weightlessness through the parabola, where it goes into, well, free fall, basically.
Yeah, yeah. But they don't go above the von Karman line.
Yeah.
Because the Karman line, I should say. I keep calling it von Karman because the fellow's name was Theodore von Karman. But the Karman line actually, we'll talk a little physics for a second. The Karman line was actually the point at which an aeroplane could not fly fast enough in the tenuous atmosphere on the edge of space without obtaining orbit. And so that's how they established this line. So there won't be airplanes that go above the Karman line, I guess is the point. But yes, zero G is a very viable alternative and affordable to many people. The other option is, I was going to back up and I was going to say Tito Shuttleworth paid about $20 million for their experience to go to the International Space Station on a Soyuz. And if you want to do a suborbital 7-minute flight with Virgin Galactic, that's about $250,000. There are some companies working on pressurized capsules that would be carried aloft above the Karman line by a balloon and then return you back down to the Earth, obviously. The estimate is that that's going to cost on the order of $150,000. So, you know, you pay to go to the International Space Station, $20 million. You can fly suborbital with Virgin Galactic for $250,000. You can take a balloon ride for $150,000. You can fly on zero G for roughly $6,000. The other thing you could do is I understand that on the garden route, there's a great bungee jumping spot where you can actually get weightless for about 7 seconds. So, yeah.
My son did that. Do that. It's the highest one in the world.
For about 150 Rand, right? So.
Yeah, the advantage about this balloon ride is that it's a 6.5-hour trip. So, yeah. I mean, that's, but of course you wouldn't be weightless because you will never be in free fall. You'll just be far right away from the Earth. Yeah. Yeah. I saw on the advert of this, Neptune 1, which has just recently done their second test flight, actually, is that that's for people who wants to get great Instagram pictures and whatever. So I thought, okay, you must have good amount of money to spend to get good Instagram pictures that way.
Right. Yeah. You know, so here's the other interesting thing that's happening in the world today. More and more people, it seems, are getting wealthier and wealthier. Mm. And so the possibility of seeing people able to take space flights as a tourist instead of having to go the traditional route of an astronaut where you you train, you get selected by a government, and then you get assigned to a flight and you know it's kind of almost a military sort of thing. But as a tourist, that's becoming more and more possible. And once that becomes available to more than just the billionaires of the world, and there'll be more and more companies that happen, and then economics will come into play, you know, supply and demand, and then suddenly the prices will start coming down. And who knows, you know, we may be taking a Virgin Galactic flight someday, maybe they'll do them from New York to Johannesburg.
Well, and there may arise an opportunity for the richest of the rich. If they want to take, say, a retired NASA engineer with them on their cost to explain them everything that is happening.
Well, Jim. You know, if you're referring to me, I'm going to keep my feet on the ground for right now, I think.
You mentioned an interesting thing, Jim. You said this Kármán line, it depends on which country you're in, 80 kilometers or 100 kilometers. Why is that?
Well, you know, I'm not exactly sure. You can think of it the same way that that countries argue over the borders in their oceans. You know, some assume that their border ends 200 miles out and others assume it's 100 miles out, 3 miles, that sort of thing. But the way it was originally proposed was based on the physics of the flight of an airplane. So, and that was calculated to be about 100 kilometers. And it changes with the density of the atmosphere, which changes over seasons and, you know, all that sort of thing. But why the United States says 80 kilometers and other nations say 100, I really don't know the answer to that.
It's probably because 80 kilometers is 50 miles and it's a round number.
Oh, that could be. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we'll be talking about space tourism, but I've often wondered why isn't there a bigger interest in so-called marine tourism, that is underwater tourism. If you go down by a sub, you don't often hear of that.
Yeah, I remember when I was growing up, there was a group off the coast of Florida that wanted to open a hotel underwater on a reef, on a coral reef. But yeah, you don't hear much about that these days. I don't know why, because certainly there's, in my opinion, there's a great deal more to see when you're on the, under the water than when you're floating in space. But maybe it's just the uniqueness of the experience. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
Probably yes. About the same complications in things that can go wrong under the sea as in space. So. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, other than SpaceX with a well proven record of being able to go into orbit, taking people to the space station, and of course the Russians, I think they call it the Roscosmos, however you pronounce that, are there any of the other space tourism companies or companies positioning them for space tourism that can actually go in orbit? I see names here on a list of Boeing and Blue Origin. Right.
And Sierra Nevada. So obviously SpaceX, Sierra Nevada will be able to go orbital with their Dream Chaser. The Boeing CST Starliner is really a late start competitor to SpaceX for carrying passengers to the International Space Station. So they have this thing called the CTS-100 Starliner that eventually, sometime this year, they're saying, would fly human beings for the first time. But they'll do it first, I believe, for NASA, and then later, like SpaceX is doing, they'll probably branch out with a commercial offering as well. And then Blue Origin, very secretive. It's founded by Jeff Bezos, who runs Amazon or owns Amazon, and doesn't talk a lot about his development. There has been one launch. It's been uncrewed, but the idea is that eventually he will carry people into space. And I believe the way he will start is he'll start by doing the Virgin Galactic thing, where he'll go up, cross the Kármán line, then come back down instead of orbiting. But eventually, I think he has intentions on orbiting as well. And if, unless I miss my guess, I bet he's targeting specifically space tourism. And of course, then there's SpaceX is working on this, what does he call it? The Starship, right? That's supposed to carry 100 passengers. You know, that's got to be space tourism. So we'll see how that plays out too, huh?
That's interesting also. I notice here that Virgin Galactic already sold 650 tickets for future flights, and those are now the $250,000 tickets. And Jim, to give you an idea, if you converted $250,000 to rand, that is about the number of millions of rand, say a middle class citizen can hope to save for retirement. So that will be your total retirement fund. And okay, you could consider that if you don't expect to live long and you don't want your children to inherit anything, that could be an option.
Well, yeah, that's, what is that? That's about 3.8 million rand, isn't it? I'm not saying that it's going to be tomorrow that Mahdi and Vili can go on their first space flight together, but it will happen someday. You know, I see the energy in the market such that these companies have been around long enough that they're not just your typical startups that make a big splash and then disappear. You know, and these are backed by important people, you know, Richard Branson and Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk. And a lot of them have only tacit interest in dealing with the governments. They've got commercial mindsets. And so I think that's important. And that's going to change the landscape. I mean, eventually we could foresee people taking a holiday on the moon.
Right, we have to close off. Jim, people can find you on the Facebook group.
Yeah, I love answering questions there on the Facebook group. It's a vibrant community. People ask great questions. So feel free.
Right, Mahdi, jou besonderhede?
Selfoonnommer 0836257154. 0836257154.
Willie?
0724579208. 0724579208.
En dan weer die program se e-posadres, sterreplanete@gmail.com. sterreplanete@gmail.com. Ons is volgende week weer terug. Tot dan. Mooi dag.